This episode is brought to you by Tranquil Path Financial Planning. Britta Kepf is a dedicated special needs financial planner at Tranquil Path Financial Planning. Britta's personalized approach in fee-only planning ensures unbiased, tailored advice. Britta specializes in retirement planning and addressing the unique financial challenges of families with special needs kids anywhere in the United States. Navigating government benefits and long-term needs planning can be overwhelming and stressful, but with Britta's guidance, families find clarity and peace of mind. Secure your family's future with a compassionate and knowledgeable partner. Contact Britta Kepf at Tranquil Path Financial Planning for personalized financial planning that meets your family's unique needs. For more information or to contact Britta, visit tranquilfp.com. That's TranquilFP.com. This episode is brought to you by Mightier. Mightier is a biofeedback-based video game platform that teaches kids to emotionally self-regulate. This leads to a significant reduction in meltdowns and parental stress. It's backed by science out of Harvard Medical and Boston Children's and has helped over 100,000 kids. For more information, visit theautismdad.com/Mightier. That's theautismdad.com/MIGHTIER and use the code theautismdad22 to save 10%. Welcome to the Autism Dad Podcast. I'm Rob Gorski. As a single dad to three amazing autistic kids, I've been the go-to global resource for autism parenting since 2010. For the past seven seasons, this podcast has provided parents with education, connection, resources, validation, and hope. This season, you'll hear from parents just like you, as well as my own kids, who will offer their unique perspective on what it's like for them to navigate the world as young autistic people. I'll feature experts from across various relevant fields, from parenting and education to therapies, nutrition, self-care, and more. So join us each week and connect with people who get it. You can subscribe on any one of your favorite podcast listening apps. And for more information, to be a guest, or learn about sponsorship opportunities, please visit theautismdad.link. Welcome back to the Autism Dad Podcast. You guys are amazing. You ask the most amazing questions, and you inspire so many episodes. And today is one of those, listener-inspired episodes. We are going to talk all about apraxia and non-speaking autism. I touched on it last season a little bit, and my God, the questions that came in as a result of that, it was unreal. And I knew I wanted to answer at least the most common one this season, and so that's what we're going to do. My guest is Samantha Fox. She was on the show last season. She's back again. She is a speech and language pathologist here in Northeast Ohio. She is an expert in Spell to Communicate and specializes in working with non-speaking autistic people. She founded the Beyond Speech Therapy Center here in Northeast Ohio, and she is amazing. We're going to talk all about apraxia. She's going to help us understand what it is, different methods to help our kids to overcome that if it's something that we can overcome, and different methods of communication, because speech is just one form of communication, right? So she's going to educate us on all of this stuff. And when you walk away from today's episode, you will have a better understanding of what apraxia is and non-speaking autism in general. So I really appreciate you guys again. Thank you for tuning in, and I hope you enjoy the interview. I'm even shorter now. What did I just do? There we go. it's disarming a little bit, because like my head is really off the screen almost, and then you're sitting like right there in the middle. Anyways, well, thank you for coming back to the show. I really appreciate it. You know, we're going to have some conversations today about non-speaking autism and some of the things related to that. And you're the perfect person to have this conversation with, because you work with people like this every day. And I've been getting a lot of questions about things like apraxia and other causes for our kids to have a difficult time speaking. So if you could take a second and just remind everybody who you are and what you do, and then we'll just sort of dive in.
Yeah. So my name is Samantha Fox. I'm a speech language pathologist. I am a Spelling to Communicate practitioner, and I am the founder of Beyond Speech Therapy Center in Monroe Falls, Ohio. So I do, like Rob just said, like you said, I specialize in working with non-speaking autistics.
Just out of curiosity, just to kind of refresh everybody who maybe didn't listen to the original episode, and I'll have that listed in the show notes. You guys can check that out, because that was really helpful as well. Mm-hmm. How did you get started doing this?
Yes. So I originally thought that I wanted to be a middle school teacher, actually. And once I started, I always loved teaching and I liked working with kids. And I did one semester of college and quickly realized that was not what I wanted to do. And so I started looking into education, health, and human services. I found speech pathology kind of on a whim. I switched my major to speech pathology. And when you're in an undergrad, you have to oftentimes do a lot of volunteer hours. So I was looking for those opportunities. And I met one of the best families in the universe, and their child was and is non-speaking and autistic. And I knew pretty much nothing about autism at that point, but I met the family and I immediately fell in love with their son. And so I started volunteering with him. And from there, I knew there was more in there that he could not express. And that kind of guided me through graduate school. I really wanted to focus on working with non-speaking autistics. And after I got out of school, I did a couple years of more quote unquote traditional practice. I had a lot of non-speaking autistics on my caseload, and I reconnected with that kiddo's mother. He's not a kid anymore. He's almost 18, but his name is Caden. And I connected with Caden's mom and I said, I just keep hitting this wall with the traditional therapy methods that I'm using. Do you have any advice? Because a lot of these students that I'm seeing remind me of Caden. And she said, I think you should look into spelling to communicate. And I think you should look into the role that motor plays in communication versus looking at it from a behavioral or a cognitive or a social, even a social developmental model, which is what I was using. So it was that she really encouraged me and Caden encouraged me to look in through that different lens. And once I did that, that really opened everything up.
It made a big difference.
It was an absolute game changer in supporting every single client on my caseload that had difficulty with motor control. But the thing was, a lot of times I didn't actually recognize it for what it was before I learned more. So I would see certain actions. I would see their body responding in certain ways. I would see them not responding to me at all, or let alone following a direction. And I'm sitting there thinking, why? Why is this? And if this is a cognitive, if they're not understanding, why is all the cognitive-based therapy I'm providing doing seemingly nothing? And why, when I'm taking a social approach, I'm building that rapport. I've known these clients now for years. I'm following their lead. I'm doing all of the things that we are supposed to do to build a connection and foster communication. And it did a little bit. It just didn't have huge gains. And they were still unable to communicate most wants, needs, ideas. So that's where when I started to look at it through that motor lens of like, oh, maybe it's more of a matter of they can't get their mouth to say what they wanted to say because they can't move the muscles in the way that they need to move them, or they can't get their body to cooperate with what their brain is telling it to do, then I changed almost everything about the way I was providing therapy. And I started to see so much more progress on multiple levels, much more cooperation, what looked like cooperation, I should say. I think they were willing, but I just wasn't. When you're not targeting the root of what's actually going on, you don't see much progress.
It's like you're kind of addressing the wrong thing. And when you can when you better understand why something's happening and then you can adjust your approach, then you can make progress. Yeah.
Yes.
It makes sense to me. I mean, I shared about my youngest, Emmett, who was he didn't speak. He used like musical tones is how he just made like musical notes. And I used to think, was like, it was like the most beautiful sound ever, because it was just a very sweet, just like tones, but never words. Mm-hmm. Right. And then one day he just started talking like he'd been talking forever. And he was about four and a half, I think, when that started. And, you know, the message that we kind of gleaned from the last episode that we did was like, always presume competence, always presume competence. That's a big, it's a big thing right now. So, so one of the things that I wanted to touch on today and just get a better understanding of, because I'm curious if that applied to Emmett when he was younger. And there's a lot of parents who are asking questions about this. What is apraxia?
Yes. So simply put, apraxia is a disconnect between the brain and the body. So a lot of kiddos will be diagnosed with childhood apraxia of speech, or CAS. And those kiddos, they have an understanding of language. They absolutely understand everything around them. And a lot of them, they do not have that global apraxia. So it's not full body apraxia. It's just apraxia of speech. So if you ask them to follow a direction or point to a picture, something like that, they're going to be able to do that. However, they cannot get their mouth to say what they wanted to say. So those words are absolutely in their head. But when the brain sends the signals to the articulators to make the sounds, it usually does not come out. So apraxia of speech, we talk about, but we also talk about that global apraxia. And global apraxia affects around 60% of autistics. So it is around 2/3 that are experiencing some form of apraxia. So that's kind of the difference between apraxia of speech versus global apraxia, but at its core, they are both brain to body disconnects. Global apraxia also encompasses apraxia of speech. So, and there's different levels of severity with apraxia as well.
So how does somebody, like if you have a child who is, you know, 2 or 3 and they're not speaking yet, mm-hmm. it could be totally, I mean, like air quotes, normal for them. They're just on a different timeline, right? Yeah. But how do you know when to worry?
That is such a good question. And so I think that even the speech milestones, some of them, I think they cause parents to worry prematurely.
I agree with that.
However, I've also seen the opposite end of the spectrum where maybe the pediatrician is saying, hey, don't worry about it. Maybe they're just a late talker. And then they get to like 4 or 5 years old and they're starting speech therapy. And I am like, oh, we probably could have benefited from starting much younger. So my advice is don't Google it. I don't think anything good is going to come out of Googling it. And I think that it sends us down a rabbit hole. So my advice is find a speech therapist, call them, have a consult with them. You know, a lot of therapists, including myself, they will do free consults on the phone. Call them, ask them the questions. They should be able to guide you. Hey, is this something that we should maybe start therapy with? Or is this something, this is sounding pretty typical for that age? And sometimes when there's difficulty in one area, but there's all these other areas that they are meeting the milestones and they're thriving with, we're not so worried about that one area. But a lot of times we do have parents who it's multiple areas, which is really no cause for concern. But early intervention truly is key, because if they really are just a quote unquote late talker, they're going to start therapy. And within 6 months, they're going to be discharged from therapy because everything is going to start to click for them. If there is something else going on that is affecting their motor system or their language system, etc., then that early intervention is going to be so helpful. So there are a lot of things I could list, like 50 things that I ask parents right now. Are they doing this? Are they doing this? Are they doing this? But my best advice is to have an individual consultation, because it's different for every kiddo depending upon where their skills lie.
And I think that's a great place to start. I mean, if you're concerned, talk to somebody who specializes in this, and they can, you know, yes, help you kind of feel your way through that. And I think that's important, because you can sort of confirm what the parents are worried about, or you can reassure them that, you know what, like, we're still, I think we should just, you know, give them a little bit more time.
Absolutely. Yes.
So when you're looking at a non-speaking kid, how do you, like, do you immediately go apraxia, or is that something that has to be kind of teased out? And then does it really matter what the cause is? I guess, if that makes sense, does it make a difference if someone has apraxia or they're just not speaking?
Yes. It does. And this is a huge area that SLPs have to kind of weed out, if you will. So when we meet a kiddo, depending upon experience and specialty and all of those things, sometimes we can meet a kiddo and know pretty immediately. Like, I will say that I meet a lot of kiddos who I can pinpoint apraxia within the first couple of sessions, looking at what their body is doing, what their mouth is doing, and that sort of thing. However, sometimes it's not so clean cut. And we have to, there's basically, when we really break it down, there are going to be two reasons in the speech pathology world why your kiddo is not talking. One of them is going to be because they have a language disorder. So they do not have the vocabulary in their head. They're not understanding or processing that vocabulary. And from that perspective, that would be the reason that they are not talking. The other side is that motor perspective that I'm talking about, where they absolutely understand whether or not they are able to show that they understand, but they do understand, but they cannot get their mouth to do what they want it to do. And so what I have personally seen is when a kiddo is not talking, most professionals look at this is a language disorder. They tie in social into there too. They're not speaking because they're not understanding, they're not processing, or they don't want to communicate. They're refusing on some level, or they're in their own little world is another one that is thrown around a lot. So that seems to be the prevailing theory with why kiddos are not talking. But as I talked to you earlier about, I have found that taking that approach and looking at it from that perspective and doing the therapy methods that are known to support those areas has not been beneficial for the vast majority of my non-speaking clients. So most non-speaking clients, especially when they're young, the therapist is modeling words for them. They're trying to have them imitate the words, not because they think their mouth can't say it, but because, oh, they're not saying it, because they don't understand that more means that they're going to get more of something. Most cases, it's not that they don't understand that, it's that they can't get their lips together for the sound and then all the subsequent movements to do the rest of the word or to say more. So when we're targeting from the speech perspective, I see progress. And that's how I make the determination, because sometimes you can't just tell by observing and looking at the body which method is actually leading to progress. If you're doing a language-based treatment approach and you're seeing progress, okay, maybe that is the core issue. If you're doing a motor-based approach and you're seeing progress, That's probably the core issue. And sometimes it is a mix of both. So I don't mean to make it so black and white, but for simplicity in describing this, one of them is going to be the primary issue. I see that most often the primary issue is identified as a language disorder when it truly is a speech or a motor disorder. So hopefully that makes
sense. You know, that makes a lot of sense because when you and I were talking about this before, and Emmett, my youngest, was sort of relaying what he remembers when he was unable to speak, he felt like he was saying the words, like that they were in his brain, and he thought that he was like he could hear himself speaking, but he felt like everybody was ignoring him. So he didn't make like a connection where like my mouth isn't working or like, or anything like that. But I think it's a prime example of, you know, I mean, he was in there the whole time. I mean, he was absorbing everything. He understood everything. He just could not, he could not understand why people were ignoring him. That was the big sort of takeaway from him. Yeah. And that's heartbreaking. Mm-hmm. That's heartbreaking. But I think it's also important that we know that. Because that just, you know, you presume competence, you don't talk to people like they're not there. And when you, I mean, you never know what someone is capable of, especially if they're unable to communicate. I mean, that's a huge barrier. And assuming that there's nobody there just because they can't speak is, I think, just a horrible mistake. It's a horrible mistake. This episode is brought to you by We Meditate. We Meditate is the first meditation platform tailored for children of all abilities, promoting emotional balance and easier bedtimes. We Meditate offers a unique storybook experience where animal friends like Weasel, who navigates autism, and Fox, who alleviates anxiety, guide your children through calming meditations. With flexible content ranging from quick 5-minute sessions to more immersive 30-minute journeys, as well as 60 minutes of music that kids can relax and fall asleep to, there's something for everyone. New meditations are added regularly, so there's always something fresh to explore. We Meditate is only $49.99 a year. For more information, please visit wemeditate.com. That's WEEMEDITATE.com. And use the promo code TheAutismDad to save 10% off your first year.
It is, and it's, you know, I think when we kind of remove ourselves from it, it's a little bit easier to say like, yeah, we should. And trust me, I'm the 100% supporter of presuming competence in all contexts. However, I do want to point out that I do understand how it could be perceived that the individual is intellectually or cognitively disabled, because I know that a lot of people are going to be listening to this and they're going to be thinking, yeah, presumed competence, but that's not going to be my kid. My kid actually is intellectually and cognitively disabled. I can see it. I see everything that they're doing. And what I want to point out about that is that every single one of the clients that I work with who have had that language approach their entire lives, and some of them are in their 20s and 30s, so they have been having therapy a very long time. That approach was used because they have been misunderstood and everybody looked at their actions, because sometimes their actions are very rogue and they look kind of just odd. Honestly, they are doing things with their body that you're like, that's not something that somebody who is intellectually there is doing. And I challenge people to look past that, look beyond the surface. That cliche, don't judge a book by its cover, is so pertinent, because all of my clients have experienced the judgment of people thinking that there was nothing there, and the professionals saying very firmly, it's intellectual and it's cognitive, when it truly was not. So
you know, I don't want to speak for every single person out there, but I know that there are so many that it really is the motor issue. And so if you can find somebody to look into that, a specialist who will look through that lens that I'm talking about, hey, if you start to see progress, you see progress, right? If you don't see progress, you don't see progress. Sometimes the progress is slow, but a lot of these parents that I talk to, they're like, we've tried everything. We have done everything. And so thinking about this motor perspective and looking more into the spelled communication is kind of a last resort for them. And they, although again, it takes time, it's not overnight that they're spelling things and able to, we're really building connections between the brain and the body. They see the progress, and they, even my speller, last week, he said, he's 13. He spelled, I wish I would have quit speech therapy sooner, is what he spelled. And, you know, as a speech therapist myself, I totally understood where he was coming from, because the traditional speech therapy methods that he was exposed to growing up did, first of all, they did not presume competence at all in him, but they also did such limited things for him in actually expressing his thoughts. So those people out there who are thinking, nope, that's not my kid, I see you. I also thought that at one point. I thought, I don't know if it's going to be this kid. But when I pushed through and presumed competence and stuck with the road of addressing the motor, I saw a lot of progress. And so did the
family. I, you know, Emmett and I have had several conversations about this since I learned this about him. I don't know why it never occurred to me that he would be able to remember that time in his life when he couldn't speak. Mm. And that's really bothered me for a long time, because like, what does that say? and I realized, like, back then, right, it was, I mean, I knew that he was in there, because he was building things and he was trying to escape the house. I mean, he was doing all kinds of stuff that he was like, mm-hmm, an evil mastermind. Just, he wasn't talking. And, but the fact that, because he couldn't speak, I assumed he wasn't making memories. It's kind of what it feels like to me. And
yes.
And I have apologized to him for that profusely, just over and over and over again. And I don't feel like I could ever do that enough. Yeah. But I think there is a human, whether it's a societal thing or it's just kind of who we are as humans, when someone communicates differently than we do, we sort of assume that it has to do with intellect and not,
yes,
anything else. And so, like, I always knew that he was dangerously smart. I never doubted that, but I just didn't. I was so caught off guard when, what was it, 11 years after he started talking, I asked him for the very first time, like, do you remember not being able to speak? And he said, yes. And I was just floored because it just never occurred to me to A, ask him, and B, I never thought that would be something that he would remember. And it's like, why would I have assumed that? Why would I not have assumed that he could remember? Do you know what I mean? So I think that's that kind of, we get caught, yeah, up in that whole, sort of judging things based on what we see on the surface. And
yes,
and I never gave it another thought, because once he started talking, I was like, whew, like, we're past this. We can just move on and pretend like it never happened, because it was a really difficult time. You know, but there are people who maybe don't, those connections don't just start firing at 4.5, and they continue down that same path. Yeah. Most. And
yeah.
And if they experience this even remotely similarly to what Emmett did, then they're there the whole time. And the idea of even like being treated like they aren't, because they're not able to speak or communicate in a way that makes sense to us, mm-hmm, is heartbreaking. And I get it. I mean, I totally get it from like the parents' perspective, because it was the same thing for me. And I would not have had this perspective if I had not had that conversation with him was like 6 months ago or something at the time we're recording this. And it's just it's just profoundly changed the way that I look at this. And then having our conversations about what like your clients have said and what they've experienced, it's in line with what Emmett has said. And it's just like, wow, like how many people out there are experiencing that and people just don't know.
Yes. And I think it is, as you said, there is a societal view that speech is paramount. It's the best, it's what should be used. And I see a lot of our clients who come to us who are non-speaking or minimally speaking. Some of them actually have what people would consider a large amount of speech. However, it's the speller can come in and say, this is a tiny blue whale. But if I ask them, hey, what do you want to be when you're older? They can't answer that with their speech. Not because they don't have an answer, but because they have been therapized so many times to say the same phrases. This is a triangle. It's a blue circle. They have these phrases that their mouth has practiced so many times that motor plan is no longer hard for them because it's been practiced repeatedly. So they open their mouth to say something that they want to communicate. And what comes out is all done. Time to come home. Time to go home. Even though that might be the opposite. They may want to be staying and engaged and go on the swing or whatever it is. So I think that people, especially if your kiddo is in speech therapy at a young age, right? If they are below the age of 5, most often I am working on trying to support speech from that motor perspective. We're working on making sounds, getting your mouth to do the movements to produce speech. After the age of 5, what I would encourage people to do is kind of open your mind a little bit to the other possibilities, because I get it. Speech is quicker. It's universal. There are benefits to speech, but would you rather your kid be able to say, this is a tiny blue whale? Or would you rather your child be able to answer the question, what do you want to be when you're older? So it's a difference between rote speech, things that are repetitive and that they've said over and over. It might look impressive and it might sound impressive. Wow, my kid went from saying 2 words and now they're saying 100 words, but those 100 words are not intentional. They're not comprehensive of their thoughts. Maybe they are. Sometimes they are very pertinent. Don't get me wrong, but I encourage parents to look at supplementing that. Even if you feel like, oh, they're expressing all of their thoughts, if they cannot answer questions like, hey, what did you think of the movie? How was your day? What did you do at school today? Anything that we would ask a neurotypical child their age, okay? If they cannot answer that, then I would look into supplementing it, because sometimes speech can be deceiving. It's not always indicative of what they're thinking. So sometimes those alternative communication methods, they supplement speech and they can really open up a lot more opportunities for individuals that have that motor difficulty. So if they have speech, people are like, oh, they don't have motor. They can say it's a tiny blue whale. If he had motor difficulties, how would he say that? Well, like I said, he sat in therapy and practiced saying it's a tiny blue whale over and over. So like any motor action, it becomes automatic over time. So just my little plug about looking into alternative communication supplement.
So, even if they're saying something, it doesn't necessarily mean that that's what they're intending to say. You know, that's
very much.
So we're talking about more of like the expressive language abilities too, like how they're feeling or what they're thinking or what they're afraid of or what makes them happy. And I want to just be very clear that neither one of us, we're not shaming parents. Cause I was in the exact same place with my son. And it's just a different perspective that I have now that I recognize.
Yeah.
And it just makes me wonder like how many other kids are out there going through something similar to what he went through. And you just have no idea, because maybe you're not getting the best advice, or maybe, you know, it just sort of is what it is. I mean, it's a very complex, dynamic, fluid situation, and every kid is different. Right. And I know how easy it is to kind of get caught up in all of that anxiety and that overwhelm and that exhaustion. And, you know, sometimes it's path of least resistance, you know, it's survival.
And it's really hard. I see that we work so closely with our parents here, and, it can be especially challenging when you're getting different information from different professionals, right? So, you know, people are saying, this is the way, this is the way, no, this is the way. And so that's, keeping an open mind is, I just think, the key. And it's, I absolutely understand that every parent is just trying to do what's best for their kid, what's going to support their kid. And that's why I say, you know, check out, try it. Now, when I say try, you can't give it one session, right? We got to like commit to a certain amount of time to see if that progress is going to show itself. But keeping that perspective of like, well, if this hasn't worked, and I think parents are automatically doing this hasn't worked, stay hopeful and stay optimistic that there might be something else. I know that is, hope is a barrier. From what I've talked to with all of my parents, we've already tried this. What's the point in trying? We've tried so many things. What's the point in trying one more thing? And so that's where my encouragement comes from is, hey, you know, if it might click, try something, try one more thing, try that motor perspective. Because if you're one of those parents who says, hey, I've tried every single thing else, which is all of the parents I work with, this is completely different, as far as a therapy method that, you might want to give a go if you're in a spot where you're like, I'm not thinking anything is really going to help at this point. And I know a lot of parents do get to that point.
So one of the things, but before we wrap this up, and I always appreciate your time, so thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Your kids, clients, because they're not all kids, I guess. Well, they're all kids probably compared to me at this point. But like, that's what it feels like anyways. they always have a message, right? Do you have any messages from them?
I do. I have Caden, the speller that I was telling you about earlier, who got me into this. You emailed me what can parents do to support their non-speaking child. So, Caden is 17 years old. He has been spelling for about 8 years. He has no speech, and his body is very tricky. He has a lot of dysregulation. And if you met him, you might not immediately think, hey, this is a brilliant guy, but this is what he is. Absolutely brilliant and hilarious. And this is what he had to say to parents. So he spelled, the most important thing you can do for your non-speaking child is to start presuming competence. If you want your child to keep fighting ahead through the challenges in their way, then you have to remove some of the barriers that are movable by you. The biggest thing that stands in the way for non-speakers is the belief that our outsides are a true representation of our insides. It is time to believe in all your child is capable of, not in what your eyes can see, but in what your heart can feel. And your awesome heart, you know that your child is more than you can see. It is time to listen to that little voice inside that is telling you there is hope. It is the key to finally hearing the amazing voice that is inside your child, too.
I have goosebumps, actually, right now.
Yeah, I do, too. I was trying not to choke up as I read it, and I've read it about 15 times.
That is so profound.
He really is, and he is just, because of the way his body is, he is, I think, so easily underestimated. And so he is such a fierce advocate for other non-speakers. He really wants to see true, open, limitless communication for everyone that struggles with communication. So he is an absolute light.
That is so cool. That is so cool. Please tell him I said thank you.
I will tell him. He's coming.
Yeah, tell him I said thank you, because that was really inspiring. And I hope that that people hear that and they just sort of take that to heart and remember that sometimes the outside doesn't represent what's going on the inside.
Absolutely.
How can people connect with you?
So probably the best way is through our website. So I can give you the link for that, Rob, but it's beyondspeechtherapycenter.com. And there is a ton of information about spelled communication. If you are wanting to learn more about that, there are videos. So I think that helps a lot of people. Like, what does it actually look like when they're pointing to the letters? Is someone touching them? No way or not. And you can kind of see, actually Caden's on there. So you can see him spelling live, which is cool. And also on Facebook, Instagram, we're on there. We share a lot of information that may be helpful to families with non-speaking or minimally speaking children.
Well, thank you again very much for taking the time to be here. I know we had to reschedule a couple of times.
No problem.
But I really appreciate it. I think it's going to help a lot of people. So thank you very much.
Absolutely. Thank you, Rob.
Before we go, I just wanted to take a moment and say thank you so much for taking the time to tune in and for all the support you guys have shown me over the last 7 seasons. I am so grateful and appreciative of each and every one of you. If you have found this useful or you just enjoyed listening, if you wouldn't mind taking a moment to leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or whatever app you're listening to this on, or share it with your friends or whatever, it's a great way to support the show. Thank you. I really appreciate it. You guys can reach me at theautismdad.link. That's theautismdad.link. And we'll talk soon. Thanks. Bye.